What's up, Rams fans, and welcome to another episode of the Rams Wire Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron DeSilva. You can follow us on Twitter at The Rams Wire, and you can follow me at Cam DeSilva. Got another loaded episode for you today. We're going to recap the Broncos game where the Rams won 23-20. Look ahead to the 49ers game in Week 7, which was fluxed out of Sunday Night Football. Talk about some of the things that are happening on the injury front, where the Rams might go with Cooper Kupp hurt. Some updates on Roger Saffold, Michael Brockers, Matt Longacre. Some looming news coming from Obo Okoronkwo on his return from the PUP list. Where the Rams can kind of improve, and all the latest happenings from Thousand Oaks in California. So we'll get started by talking about what happened on Sunday against the Broncos. Obviously, you know that the Rams won 23-20. Spoiler if you haven't watched the game yet. The Rams, they had control of the game from the very start. They went up 3-0, eventually added another field goal in the first quarter. They never relinquished the lead, and their biggest lead of the game was 20-3 in the third quarter. From there, the Broncos scored 10 straight points. Cairo Santos added an important field goal in the fourth quarter, a 21-yarder that he made to make it 23-13. The Broncos in the final minute scored a touchdown to make it 23-20. They needed an onside kick. They failed on that conversion as it went out of bounds, and the Rams took over and kneeled it down a couple times to end the game. So a little bit too close for comfort for the Rams, even though they did, I wouldn't say dominate the game. They did have almost 100 more yards than the Broncos did, but the score, as you can see, it was a close game. Even though the Rams went up by 17 points, they nearly blew it. They're not a team who usually relinquishes leads when they do get big cushions during games. But this was nearly a new situation for them as far as blowing leads go. Fortunately, they hung on. Cairo Santos with that clutch field goal. He did miss one earlier in the game, but he was able to kind of give the Rams that insurance that they needed down the stretch. Jared Goff played okay. Todd Gurley went off. The defense improved after giving up 190 yards to the Seahawks the week before. The secondary is still a little bit of a question, but overall a strong performance from the defense. So let's get into it a little bit in more detail. I said that Jared Goff wasn't very sharp. He completed 14 of 28 passes, so 50%, 201 yards, no touchdowns, surprisingly, and an interception. His passer rating was 58.8. In the past two games, he only has one touchdown pass and three picks. So after that huge game against the Vikings, where he absolutely went off, set all kinds of records, had a perfect passer rating, he's gone a little bit cold against the Seahawks and these Broncos. Both of those games were on the road. Goff is usually a better player on the road, but these past 2 weeks, that simply hasn't been the case. He has had time to throw. Sometimes he's taken too long to throw and kind of surveyed the field for a little bit too long, but he hasn't. Granted, his wide receivers have been hurt. He hasn't had a full core of receivers the past two games between Cooper Kupp suffering the concussion, same with Brandon Cooks, and then Kupp obviously had that knee injury on Sunday. So he hasn't had a full core of receivers. That's kind of hurt him a little bit. But the pass rush of the Broncos and Seahawks gave him a little bit of trouble. He was sacked 5 times. 3 of those were by Bradley Chubb, the fifth overall pick. Von Miller made his way into the backfield a few times. So it was really just a strong team effort from the Broncos, and you can't really take anything away from them. They played well. The defense stepped up. Even though they allowed 208 yards to Todd Gurley, they really did a good job against the Broncos, or excuse me, the Rams passing attack. The cornerbacks, they were good in coverage against guys like Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods, even though he had a big game. Cooks only caught 2 of 6 targets for 53 yards, and 44 of those came on one play. So really, it was just one play where he had an impact in this game. That's a testament to Chris Harris Jr., Bradley Roby, those guys on the other side who played well. You got to give them credit where credit is due. But those sacks, it's a little bit concerning that they did give up five. That's the most the offensive line has given up since week 17 of 2016, when Goff was sacked seven times. But you can't pin all of them on the offensive line. That's been the case all season. When Goff has been sacked, it's mostly been his own fault for holding onto the ball too long, or simply running into sacks where there's nothing that the offensive lineman can do. Andrew Whitworth was beat a couple times by Chubb. I think Tyler Higbee had one play where he was matched up with the rookie and gave up a sack there. But Goff has to get the ball out on time. He has to make go through his reads quicker and not hold on to the ball and allow these pass rushers to close in. So obviously five sacks is never a good sign, but you can't really pin all of them on the offensive line. On the bright side, Todd Gurley did have 208 yards. As good as he was last year, he's been arguably even better this season. It's really hard to kind of pinpoint what he's doing better. He does have more carries, more yards, a few fewer receiving yards, but on the ground he's been more successful. He leads the NFL. He has something like 623 yards, I want to say, give or take, on the season. So he's having a really good year. 11 total touchdowns through six games. That puts him on pace for 29 on the year. So he's played really, really well. And when you see him operating the way that he has in that offense, it's fun to watch. That offensive line deserves a lot of credit for opening up those running lanes. They were getting to the second level, getting blocks on those linebackers. Austin Blythe had a few plays where he had some really nice reach blocks. So the offensive line as a whole has just not gotten a lot of credit for the way that they've played, and they deserve more praise. After every game, Todd Gurley and Jared Goff are quick to give them credit and talk about how they've been quote-unquote spectacular. It's arguably the best line in the league. Pro Football Focus ranked it number one in the NFL prior to week six, so that just goes to show you how talented they are and how they haven't missed a beat since Jamon Brown relinquished his starting job to Austin Blythe. So really a strong effort from the offensive line, from Todd Gurley. It's been a really strong performance through six games from him. Like I said, he had 208 yards on 28 carries, two touchdowns. And ironically, those are the same exact numbers that he had in his best game at Georgia. 28 carries, 208 yards, and two touchdowns. So pretty weird coincidence there, but kind of just a testament to the way that he's played this season. Moving on to another player on offense who had a strong game, that was Robert Woods. He had 109 yards on just seven catches. He was targeted 10 times, obviously saw more passes come his way. With Cooper Kupp going out, with Brandon Cooks not being exactly completely effective. He's rounded into a really good receiver for the Rams. And I don't know if he gets enough credit for that either. Since coming over from the Bills, he's really turned into a number one caliber receiver, even though he hasn't necessarily had to be one of those. With Sammy Watkins, with Brandon Cooks, with Cooper Kupp there in Los Angeles. But when called upon, he's stepped up. He's had two or three games, I think, this season where he's had at least 100 yards receiving. So he's shown the ability to kind of take that next step and become a receiver who can go off and really have a strong performance against a strong secondary like the Broncos have with Chris Harris Jr. and Bradley Roby. Really, we don't talk about him enough. There's a few players on the Rams, like the offensive line, like Michael Brockers, like Corey Littleton, who we just don't talk about enough. But Robert Woods is definitely one of those players who's an underrated receiver and a guy who is really an integral part of this offense, especially with the injuries that they've suffered at receiver. On the flip side, kind of going away from the players and looking at Sean McVay from this game, He said it himself after the game that it was just not a good performance from him. You don't often think about Sean McVay having bad games and good games, considering how great of a coach he's been so far in his career. But he wasn't particularly pleased with the way that he called the game on Sunday. There's a few plays where he got a little bit too aggressive. He was disappointed in his red zone play calling. And really just he didn't like the way that he handled the way that he was calling the plays during that game. He talked about a sequence where in the red zone he called a tap pass from Goff to Gurley, where Gurley came in motion. Gurley fumbled, he didn't fumble it, but he didn't catch it cleanly, so it was an incomplete pass. And McVay said that he kind of wanted to take a timeout there, reset, regroup, and get a better play call in. He didn't wind up doing that, and the Rams had to settle for a field goal. They didn't convert in the red zone as much as they should have. The first two drives, the first two scoring drives that they had ended in 26 and 39-yard field goals. So both of those went into the red zone, or at least pretty close to it, and they didn't come away with touchdowns. They didn't score their first touchdown till the second half, or the second quarter, excuse me. So it really just their red zone offense was not very good. That interception from Goff, it was intended for Josh Reynolds. The cornerback barely got a hand on it, bounced off of Reynolds' face mask and into the arms of Darian Stewart. But that's on a third and long where you're in deep in your own zone, you have a lead, and McVay opted to call for a pass instead of running the ball and kind of milking the clock. And it wound up turning into a turnover, and then I believe the Broncos turned that into 6 points for a touchdown. So really just some kind of precarious calls by McVay, questionable ones, yes, but really he didn't cost the Rams a win or anything like that. So I think he was a little bit too hard on himself after the game. You move on, you get better. He's always trying to improve as a play caller and as a coach. So really just you move on and you go to the next game. As far as injuries go, Cooper Kupp, you obviously know about him. He had that kind of scary, gruesome, not great looking injury that he suffered in the first half against the Broncos. He caught a pass, or excuse me, he took a handoff. Ran upfield, gained the first down, got 12 yards, but then the injury happened. Darian Stewart, coming off of a block, grabbed Kupp from behind, put his hand inside of the shoulder pads, yanked him down to the ground. Kupp kind of got his leg caught under him, twisted his ankle, it looked like, and it resulted in an MCL sprain in his left knee. It was flagged for a horse collar. It was pretty obvious that that was going to be called for a penalty. Cooper Kupp said he has no hard feelings, no ill will towards Darian Stewart. He was just making a football play, but that's not a play that you want to see in the NFL very often. When you tackle a guy from behind like that with his shoulder pads, it's usually not a good sign for their legs. And that's kind of it almost cost Cooper Kupp his season. We don't know how long he's going to be out. Sean McVay said on Monday that Kupp is at least going to miss this weekend's game against the 49ers, most likely. But after that, it's just going to be week to week. They don't really know when he's going to be back on the field. So a little bit of a kind of questionable situation there for the Rams to deal with. In the meantime, McVay did mention that they could bring in a receiver, someone from the outside, someone they have a history with. He wouldn't say which receiver that was, or if it's going to be someone from another team's practice squad, if it's going to be a free agent on the market, we don't really know. But they are obviously looking at outside options to kind of replace Kupp in the slot. This season, he's second in catches, third in yards, has the most touchdowns on the team with five. So really a big loss for the Rams, but it could have been much, much worse if it were, say, his ACL, or if he did tear something in his left knee. As for the other injuries, the Rams had quite a few coming out of this game. Roger Saffold missed 17 snaps with a knee injury. Sean McVay called that a knee sprain. Not really sure exactly the severity, but he's expected to play Sunday against the 49ers. So good news there. Andrew Whitworth missed a few plays. Not really sure what the injury was there. We didn't get an update from McVay on Monday, but it doesn't seem like there's any reason for concern with regards to that injury. Michael Brockers also left briefly. He went down with a shoulder injury. He was grabbing it pretty in pretty much some visible pain on the ground. He had an AC sprain in his shoulder. He's going to be fine. He's expected to play Sunday as well. And then Matt Longacre, who has taken over as a starting outside linebacker with Dominique Easley gone. He had back spasms. He left the game as well, didn't return. And he's expected to play on Sunday as well against the 49ers. So really four starters went down, and only one of them is expected to miss any sort of time with injury. So Rams get some really good news, really fortunate on that front, that no one's really going to miss more than a week, hopefully. Still obviously determining what the severity of Cooper Kupp's injury is, but could have been much, much worse. As far as other injuries go, Obo Okoronkwo, the rookie from Oklahoma, say that five times fast. Everyone's been waiting for him to return. He was their fifth-round pick this year. He was a guy that some teams, some analysts, I should say, thought could go as early as the second or third round. Undersized, a little bit not as great of an athlete as you expect to see nowadays at outside linebacker, where you want good length, good athletes, guys who can bend the edge and turn the corner quickly. Okoronkwo is not someone who's going to thrive at doing that, but he does have great college production at Oklahoma. He didn't perform that great at the combine, but given his size, he has enough athleticism to be a starting caliber player for the Rams. He was placed on the PUP list before the season began after he suffered a broken foot in spring workouts. So that sidelined him all offseason. He was unable to participate in training camp, missed the entire preseason, and really hasn't played much football at all since being at Oklahoma. Sean McVay mentioned that last week when he was talking about Okoronkwo returning, because those 6 weeks are up, and now he's eligible to come back and play for the Rams. He tweeted something after Sunday's game and said that was a long 6 weeks, and that kind of sent fans into a frenzy. Given the Rams' kind of lack of depth and top-tier talent at the position, it's easy to get excited about him. Anytime you have a rookie pass rusher, you have to temper your expectations, because very rarely do they come up with double-digit sacks and really have huge seasons, especially when you miss six games. I said at the beginning of the year this could be a redshirt season for Okoronkwo. It's just hard to expect him to have any sort of major impact on the season. But the Rams have openings, and they need pass rushers. Samson Ebukam is not getting it done right now. He does only have one sack this season, but he should have had one on Sunday where he stripped Case Keenum of the ball. Keenum picked the ball up and threw an incomplete pass, so that didn't go as a sack. And then I think against the Raiders, he had one where it went for a tackle for loss, but instead of being a sack, he was credited for just a tackle for loss. So lost out on two sacks there, but he's just not getting after the quarterback consistently enough. He's not pressuring them at a high enough rate for being a starting outside linebacker on a defense where you also have Aaron Donald, Michael Brockers, and Dominican Sue up front. He needs to be better. He needs to kind of step up a little bit and become that starting caliber pass rusher that the Rams really need on the outside. There's only so much pressure you can get from the interior with Donald and Sue. And although both of those guys are doing a great job right now, they need some kind of complementary pass rush from the outside to take some pressure off of them in the middle of the defense. So when you look at Okoronkwo, he's not your prototypical pass rusher, but he does fit the mold of what kind of Wade Phillips likes in his outside linebackers. You're obviously not going to call him Von Miller But he does kind of fit the size specifications of Shane Ray and Shaq Barrett, and where they're a little bit undersized, don't possess elite athleticism on the outside, but they can still be effective. So that's kind of something where the Rams really liked him coming out of Oklahoma. They wanted him to hopefully fall to them. They feel they got a good value in him in the fifth round, especially with teams saying, with analysts saying that teams could have taken him in, say, the second or third round. So he's a guy with a lot of promise. He's someone that really a lot of fans can't wait to see on the field, not only because he's a rookie, but because of the position that he plays and the potential impact that he can have. So keeping an eye on him in the coming weeks where he's going to practice, hopefully. Sean McVay didn't commit to him automatically getting a roster spot, but definitely someone who can help in the long run. A couple of things that are working against him are the fact that the Rams do have so many injuries. So when you look at Kupp, the Rams might potentially bring in a receiver to replace him, which would obviously take up a roster spot because they're not going to put Kupp on injured reserve. So that's an extra receiver that they're going to have to carry. And then when you look at Greg Zuerlein, if he doesn't return this week, which Sean McVay didn't sound convinced he's going to, they're going to have to carry two kickers on the roster still too. So that's two players who, in Kupp and Zuerlein, who are potentially not going to play this weekend, but are still going to be taking up a roster spot. It's obviously not an ideal situation, but it's something that teams across the NFL have to deal with because they're so reluctant to put players with short-term injuries on IR because you're not guaranteed to get them back until 8 weeks later. That's obviously not something that's probably in the cards for Cooper Kupp, who's just week to week, but it could delay Ogorenko being activated because the Rams are so short on roster spots right now because of the number of injuries that they've suffered in recent weeks. So depending on how that plays out, it could be a little bit longer for Ogorenko to get back onto the field for the Rams. By no means was he even set to return this week against the 49ers. He's going to take a little while to get up to speed and to get back into the action. But those injuries to other players could have an effect on when he's activated. So, looking at the weaknesses on defense, the pass rush is still a concern. The Rams are not at the top in sacks, despite having Dominican Sue and Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers and Ebukam and Longacre rushing the passer. But I mean, you got to be better. You got to get after the quarterback more. They're getting pressure, but pressures are not anywhere near as good as sacks. Sacks are a loss of down. They're a big loss of yardage usually. And pressures, quarterbacks, you never know. They could still complete passes when under pressure. So definitely not as good as sacks. So that's something that they have to improve upon in the coming weeks. Fortunately, they did get better against the run against the Broncos, where they limited them to just 60 yards rushing after giving up 190 to the Seahawks the week before. So a nice improvement there. That's on the part of both the linebackers and the defensive line. Safeties John Johnson and LaMarcus Joyner were better at tacklings. They filled lanes well, and really it's just a better effort all around from the defense. The pass defense is still a little bit of a concern. Marcus Peters is, I don't know if he's 100%. He wouldn't say definitively if he was. He was a little bit sarcastic in saying it last week when asked, but he seems like he's getting up to speed and kind of getting back into a rhythm after suffering that calf injury. On the other side, Troy Hill and Sam Shields have struggled a little bit. Hill was particularly off the mark on Sunday against the Broncos. Didn't have his best game. He's kind of an inconsistent player anyway, but he needs to be better if he's going to fill in for Aqib Talib until he's able to return. But I would say those are probably their two biggest issues right now. If the run defense can kind of continue their strong play, they got another kind of tough matchup in the 49ers, who have Matt Breida. Raheem Mostert played pretty well for them on Monday night. So they got another test of a running back tandem coming in San Francisco. And speaking of the 49ers, they lost to the Packers on Monday night. If you didn't catch it, they gave up a fourth quarter lead to the Packers Aaron Rodgers drove down the field a couple of times to tie it up and then eventually take the lead on a game-winning field goal. Did his usual back shoulder throws, beat the coverage with seemingly impossible throws to defend. So obviously it's just the magic that he brings to the table. CJ Beathard has played pretty well for them. That's who the Rams are going to face on Sunday. This game was flexed out of primetime because Jimmy Garoppolo is obviously injured and on IR. But Beathard has played pretty well. He had a decent game against the Packers. Richard Sherman is playing very well for the 49ers. I wouldn't say the best year of his career, but teams aren't really attacking him the way they did last season when he was a little bit off. So having a good year for the 49ers, his first season in San Francisco, someone that the Rams have to be aware of in coverage and possibly kind of shy away from him and go towards the other 49ers cornerbacks. The 49ers are making up for the loss of Jerick McKinnon, who suffered an injury, I think it was in the preseason, and they filled in with Alfred Morris, Raheem Mostert, Matt Breida. They've all played pretty well in his place, so that's kind of what the Rams are going to be up against on Sunday. The biggest threat, I think, though, is Marquise Goodwin, the wide receiver who was from Buffalo, joined the 49ers last season, having a nice year for the Niners again this year. So he's doing well for the 49ers this year, even without Jimmy Garoppolo there. He's someone that you would think Marcus Peters would kind of see some of, but considering that Peters usually just plays the left side of the defense, we might not see him on Goodwin all the time. So it's going to be a good game, I think. The Rams right now are, I think, 10.5-point favorites. But the 49ers, they look like a decent competitive team, especially after nearly beating the Packers on Monday night. So looking forward to that Week 7 matchup, and hopefully it'll be a good one. That's going to wrap it up for today's show. Keep it locked into the Rams Wire all week. We'll be previewing the upcoming game, recapping Sunday against the Broncos. And then obviously be sure to follow us on Twitter @TheRamsWire and @CamDeSilva. Have a good week, guys, and we'll talk to you soon.